Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tuesday is here. We got a great show for you today. A packed lineup. We're going to have a Tuesday trifecta. And we've got my favorite piece of sports audio to dive into that I've had come by me in a really, really long time. Hey, Albie, remember I told you about the headphone thing and I could get through this? Nah, it's time. I got shorts in my headphones.
Oh, that's the worst.
I got wires shorting out. It's in my left ear, then it's in my right ear, then it's in no ears. We got to get this done. I'm sorry this was not done before we started the program, but sometimes that's why you enjoy live radio, for the little picadillos of what might happen.
Should be wearing your JBLs. You forgot them.
I know. These are the been in my bag headphones,
which I don't think is
good for headphones.
No. Mm-mm.
There we go. It's one of those, if I hold it the right way, everything sounds fine. We've all had those pairs of headphones where you got to like push on the jack just a little to make sure that it's got the connection that makes the sound happen.
It needs to lean a certain way.
Yeah. We've all been there. My headphone jack needs a gangster lean. It's there. It's happening. We got a great show for you today. I don't care if I can hear it or not. You'll be able to hear it, and you're going to want to hear everything that we have for you. Brian Wheeler, who is the play-by-play voice of the Portland Trailblazers, is going to join us, and we got a lot to talk about in the next round here, or in the next game, that I didn't think we would be talking about. You're telling me Kevin Durant, who was getting his calf rubbed on in game one, like really got hurt? Kevin Durant might not go? Is that what you're telling me about game two? Kevon Looney is out of game two. Not that I think that there are going to be a lot of minutes for him, but if Kevin Durant isn't playing, there are more minutes for him. And Matt Barnes might not be ready to go, and all of a sudden, it could be a little shorthanded tomorrow night for the Golden State Warriors. They needed all hands on deck, basically, to just beat two Portland Trailblazers last time around. Lillard and McCollum were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And the Warriors need all hands on deck to get through this the way we want them to get through it in four games. There's no doubt they're going to get through it. Can they get through it in four games? That is the question. My game two prediction, before I heard about this, Kevin Durant might not be available, and now Looney, and now I might shrink the team's depth chart a little bit. My game two prediction should be pain. Like, it should be. It should be like Mr. T in Rocky III. Pain. That's what this should be. You know, I was looking at what happened in that game one, and I'm evaluating it almost like there was a loss that they're bouncing off of here. Like, there was a problem with the Golden State Warriors, so much so in game one that they have so much to improve. Like, they don't. They won. They won the actual game, which is good. By the way, smooth, Albie. Thank you very much. New headphones plugged in. Oh, they even fit better. They're nice and tight. Ooh, nice. Ooh, I've never felt a more secure pair of headphones that I had to plug in.
Yeah.
I will bring the JBLs back in tomorrow. I can promise you that. See, the reason why I take them home with me is because if you want anything stolen, just leave it around a radio station for 15 minutes, and it just things grow feet and legs and walk away all the time.
Yep.
The Warriors have 48 hours to study film of what not to do. Whatever they did in game one that let Portland's backcourt just go bonkers, they now have 48 hours to study it and get ready for what to do next. There is no team that bounces back from a bad game, from a bad performance, like a bad week or bad month, which they don't even have anymore, quite like the Golden State Warriors. They didn't play poorly. We've seen them play better, though. I think better shows itself in game two. At least that's what I thought before we learned that Kevin Durant might be a question mark for this game. I can tell you right now that Klay Thompson never plays poorly on both ends, and kind of did in game one. He had 15 points, was just 1 of 6 from three, and it wasn't the threes that he missed. It was when he missed his threes. Klay Thompson is the dagger in Warrior momentum. When Klay is hitting threes that punctuate a big defensive play on the other end, The building goes nuts. The Warriors might as well have scored 6 points on that one shot just from a momentum standpoint. Klay missed momentum threes, which kept the Warriors from being who they truly are. I don't think he does that again. Defensively, he didn't have his feet underneath him in game one. I think he gets his feet underneath him in game two. Andre Iguodala's role in this series just got a little bit more interesting. If Kevin Durant really has a calf issue that they want to be careful with, sitting him for game two, knowing that they pretty much got this series wrapped up, you know, but Andre Iguodala is going to need to do more in game two tomorrow than he did in game one, where he played 32 minutes but only had 2 points and only took one shot. That is not happening two games in a row. Ian Clark, say it with me, trailblazer killer. Who would have ever thought? But Ian Clark sees Portland, plays great. Barnes, again, we'll see if he's back in the mix. JaVale McGee, he's the living mascot right now. Keep throwing it down, big man. Said about 6 or 8 points. If Kevin Durant's not playing, you might need to go 10, 12, 14 points, JaVale. And it could happen. Keep lobbing it up for him to throw it down. Meanwhile, Draymond Green, I expect him to play like he's 8 feet tall the rest of the postseason. A postseason game, it's made for Draymond intensity, and I love him. Absolutely love the guy's game. So we're not worried about him one bit. Not one bit. I like an intense basketball game, and at times we had one last night when the Spurs and Memphis Grizzlies were playing. I watched the game. I sat down and caught a good chunk of it. Certainly caught what I thought were the important chunks of it. And about 5 minutes in, and I watched for at least 40 minutes, but about 5 minutes in, it was clear that the Grizzlies weren't exactly getting calls in San Antonio. And the more you watched, the more that theme kept on a-holding. Memphis was getting clobbered going to the rim. It was a series of no calls for their offensive drives, and it was a series of bad calls when they were playing defense to the point where Zach Randolph went up to defend and stop. I believe it was Kawhi Leonard. Who it was really doesn't matter, because there was a foul called on Zebo that just was not there from any conceivable angle. There wasn't even a reaction from the player that they assumed he fouled that would suggest he was just fouled. There was no break to his rhythm. There was no push in his momentum. I mean, there's nothing odd about the play except for the whistle that occurred. The camera goes right to David Fizdale. And you did not have to be an FBI lip reader to see that he just used the mother of all swear words as he was asking, "Are you kidding me?" It was, "Are you something kidding me?" And he was getting a little bit angrier and angrier and angrier with each and every call that we saw. My friends, we have a new leader. His name is David Fizdale. And this is one of the best sports quotes I've come across in postgame in a long time. Now, I know that this is some sound that we were just listening to the Afternoon Delight play with. The only time I am ever envious of a morning show, because those hours are brutal. Those are life-changing, brutal hours. God bless those guys. But the only thing that makes me envious of the morning show is when something happens late night, especially on the West Coast. So everybody on the East Coast is asleep. But a late night sporting event happens. A lot of the audience went to bed, and you will find out about all this new stuff as you're listening the next morning and you're driving in. You're listening to Joe Lowe and Dibs. And they probably played sound for you that you heard for the very first time this morning. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you've probably heard this 15 to 25 times. But I am not going to not play it, because it is amazing. And as far as we're concerned, it's officially new to the Damon Bruce Show. Dave Fizdale with an all-time against the refs rant. Here he is from last night.
You know, it's unfortunate that I got a guy like Mike Conley who in his whole career has got zero technical fouls and just cannot seem to get the proper respect from the officials that he deserves. It was a very poorly officiated basketball game. Zach Randolph, the most rugged guy in the game, had zero free throws, but somehow Kawhi Leonard had 19 free throws. First half, we shot 19 shots in the paint, and we had 6 free throws. They shot 11 times in the paint, and they had 23 free throws. I'm not a numbers guy, but that doesn't seem to add up. Overall, 35 times we shot the ball in the paint. We had 15 free throws for the game. They shot 18 times in the paint and had 32 free throws. Kawhi shot more free throws than our whole team. Explain it to me. We don't get the respect that these guys deserve because Mike Conley doesn't go crazy. He has class, and he just plays the game. But I'm not going to let them treat us that way. You know, I know Pop's got pedigree, and I'm a young rookie, but they're not going to rook us. That's unacceptable. That was unprofessional. My guys dug in that game and earned the right to be in that game, and they did not even give us a chance. Take that for data.
What do you do after that besides this?
Take that for data. They're not going to rook us. They're not going to rook us. Take that for data.
I love the little on-beat table slap at the end.
Take that for data. They're not going to rook us.
So, They Not Gonna Rook Us is the name of my debut hip-hop album. I hope you pick it up. It's out next Tuesday. That is one of my favorite sports quotes of all time. David Fizdale, I never knew you had it in you. I freaking love you.
Take that for data.
That is, I mean, I swear to God, if we didn't already have Sports Don't Build Character, they reveal it that we end the show with.
Take that for data.
It's good.
Is a pretty good way to end any show. It really, really is.
They're not going to rook us.
That is phenomenal. Everyone's talking about this.
Take that for data.
And that's just a great way to say, look at the numbers. It really is. I've never heard that before. That could be the name of my release after They're Not Going to Rook Us goes double platinum. Take That for Data could be the name of my follow-up hip-hop album. But I mean, this...
They're not going to rook us.
That's the line.
It is.
That's the line. It's not...
Take that for data. They're not going to rook us.
That's the money. That's the money shot right there. That is incredible. The situation that he's in as a young coach, watching his team get bullied against a team that gets all benefits of the doubt, against a coach that gets all benefits of the doubt, against the brand standard of the league. The San Antonio Spurs getting just crushed because you're playing 5-on-8. You're playing 5-on-8. Kawhi Leonard shot more free throws than his team. That'll get a coach's attention real fast. When you are playing the game in the paint, that's where fouls occur. So how come the Grizzlies can be the most in-the-paint team in the league and not get some calls there? And for him to say, I swear to you know, for him to be a guy who's this early in his career and be like, you know, I'm not Greg Popovich, but I didn't come here to just play the role of the sucker either. I love you, David Fizdale. Whenever David Fizdale wants to come on this show, Albie, we will bump any guest for David Fizdale. That guy is my new coaching post-game press conference spirit animal. He knew that he... Look at it this way. We talk about fouls in the playoffs. Fouls. And what's the thing we always say about fouls in the playoffs? Get your money's worth. If you're going to put it on somebody, if you're going to put a body on somebody, it's a postseason. Get your money's worth. Well, David Fizdale's probably got a $50,000 fine coming his way after that presser. And he, my friends, got his money's worth. I don't care what they fine him. How about, hey, David Fizdale, you could beat the Spurs straight up. And that wouldn't have us talking about you as much as that. That's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of guy you want to run through a wall for. Spurs are probably going to get him out there, you know, and knock him out real soon, but not without a fight from Dave Fizdale. That was awesome.
They're not going to rook us.
Don't mess with that guy, man. They're not going to rook us. That is the quote of the postseason so far. And by the way, the Grizzlies are already selling not going to rook us, take that for data t-shirts at the team store.
Are they really?
They had that turned around in 12 hours. They knew, absolutely knew that they had gold. Like, what is it? Mana from heaven, manna from gold, pennies from heaven, whatever it is. Uh-huh. Manna, the bread of God, whatever. This is that. I guarantee you there was some Grizzlies. I come up with ideas to sell people stuff guy watching that post-game press conference last night. Sick to his stomach that they lost the game. And then he's like,
they're not going to rook us.
What'd he say?
Take that for data.
Call the printer. Just call the printer. That was awesome. Absolutely fantastic. Damon, I already got the David Fizdale GoFundMe page up and ready to go from the Penske Auto Sales text line. We got a great show for you today. Do you like guests? Do you like a lot of guests? Do you like Tuesday Trifecta? Fantastic, because that's what we have. Let me give you all the data that you need. Brian Wheeler joins me at 3:30. John Morosi is going to stop on by for a little baseball talk earlier in the week than he normally does, because he's traveling on Friday when we normally talk to John. We're going to talk to him at 3:45 today. Tony Bruno comes up at 4 o'clock. Marcus Thompson at 4:30. A Tuesday trifecta at 5:15. Amin El Hassan from ESPN, who I sat next to for every Warrior home game in the finals last year, including Game 7. Someone is telling me that Amin keeps on quoting the conversation we were having on his podcast.
Really?
And I appreciate that, because I've been quoting him too about some of the conversations we had as we were watching that game. And he is going to join us today. Looking forward to talking to Amin El Hassan at 5:45. And then at 6:15 tonight, it is Chris Townsend time, and time for the A's dugout show. The A's, meanwhile, you know, they've got the Rangers in town tonight. Not my Darvish. You Darvish. You Darvish against Andrew Triggs. Triggs is off to a you Darvish-like start. He is 2-0 with a clean-as-a-whistle ERA. He's allowed 8 hits and 1 unearned run in 11 2/3 this season. 4 strikeouts, 4 walks. I'm sure he'd like to see those numbers improve just a little, but honestly, there is no more improvement better than 2-0 without an earned run surrendered. Darvish, who is a true ace of the Texas Rangers. We talk about some guys see some jerseys and they perform well. Ian Clark, Portland, plays well. Yu Darvish sees A's green and gold. He turns into somebody else other than Yu Darvish. In 15 starts against the A's, he is 1-3 with a 5.72 ERA in the Coliseum. No, 15 starts against the A's in his career, 1-3 with a 5.72 ERA at the Coliseum. We want to get our data points correct. Don't want to get that any of that wrong.
Take that for data.
It's going to be hard not to push that button every 5 minutes today. I'm not even kidding.
It's going to be hard not to say that on a daily basis.
Oh, that's in the...
I clocked that one in.
Yeah.
That one's in the brain.
Damon, you absolutely need the a bonus track on your CD titled Oakland Park Recreation. You're right about that. That needs to be on there too. That they still haven't changed their name yet, have they? The Parks and Recreation has not changed it to Park and Recreation yet? Should come. It should come. You want to know what a weird mess the Oakland owner put his Oakland players in the city of Oakland? All you had to do was see Derek Carr feel the wrath of Raider Venom, who is beloved. And I'm going to tell you right now that no matter what Derek Carr meant or said, if it was received poorly, problem probably lies with the receiver, not the sender. Derek Carr is as nice of a human being that has ever set foot in a professional locker room. This is a legit dude who honestly cares. And when he says he cares about fans, he means it. There's no doubt in my mind. When he at his press conference the other day, talked about how, you know, basically, I know that real, you know, he was talking about the nomadic past of Raider fans with the move to LA in the rearview mirror, and now a move, you know, to Las Vegas coming up in the future. He basically wanted to say, look, real Raider fans follow this team no matter where it is. And I love those guys. And that's what he was trying to say. So what Derek didn't realize he was doing was unintentionally stepping into the real fan debate.
Mm-hmm.
And he can just expect an awful lot of this. And so can any player who is asked about any element of fandom around this team. There is no right answer. The position Mark Davis's decision has put his team in is officially going to be as big a distraction as there is in the NFL and will be the reason why next year when we're picking playoff teams, I probably don't pick the Raiders. It's going to be a headache. It's going to be a headache, and no one around here wants to admit what's coming. What's coming is going to get angrier and nastier than anything you've seen up to this point because wins are going to start pissing people off. Not just the losses. I promise you. The fact that this team or fans were ready to pounce on Derek Carr the minute that he said something just shows you how hot and frisky everyone still is.
Calm down. He's the most well-intended guy out there.
But
nothing but good intentions.
He unintentionally stepped into that real fan debate, and that is one that you just do not want right now. Let me tell you what I would do. If I were Derek Carr's agent, whatever we were going to ask for, which was going to be a ton of money, I'm tacking on an extra $20 million because the face of your franchise now has to be a spokesman for the dumbest freaking topic in football history, the Raiders moving again. 888-957-9570. We're going to be taking your calls throughout the day. We got a great Tuesday trifecta coming up a little bit later on. We're going to get to the Tuesday trifecta a little earlier than normal, sometime around 5:15 today. Brian Wheeler, he is the play-by-play voice of the Portland Trailblazers, who I tell you, they earned an awful lot of respect in defeat in Game 1, and we talk to him about it next.
I've known Draymond since he was at Michigan State, a little chubbier since he was chubby at Michigan State.
Because I don't even talk trash, and he was saying so much out there that I had a whole lot to say tonight.
Where I'm from, if you talk trash to me, I'm going to talk trash to you.
I'm going to take exception to it, and I'm gonna say something back.
Turner to McCollum for three. It's up and good. Lillard with the ball. Raises up, shoots over Andre, and knocks down a three. McCollum push shot on the go, and he hits another one.
As I said, he makes tough shots look easy.
27 points for C.J. McCollum.
It's simple fun. You know, you talk, he hit a shot, he's talking to us. You know, I hit a shot, I'm talking to them. I missed the dunk. He's telling me I need to do calf raises. And
I mean, they're talented players, and so they're going to make some tough shots.
It's a good back and forth. It makes the game a lot funner, that's for sure.
I love that post-game sound from all three players. Draymond said he was told he needed to do calf raises. That's one of the greatest on-court barbs I've heard in a long time. I'll tell you, the Blazers came here to try to win game one, and their backcourt almost did it. I don't think they can play much better than that, which might dictate the way the rest of this goes. Sometimes in defeat, though, an awful lot of respect is earned. And on the court, C.J. McCollum and Dame Lillard earned a level of respect that I don't think everyone had before they saw what they did in that game and understood how good they were. Damian Lillard, you know, he's got the love around here because he's from Oakland. But what they both said about the trash talking in the post-game press conference, you want to talk about two young guys who absolutely get this league. I have a ton of respect for those guys. The way that they talked about that on-court trash talking means that they absolutely get it. And the Trailblazers' future in that backcourt is in very good hands. All of their broadcasts come with a very good voice. That voice is Brian Wheeler, who's good enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Brian, Damon, Bruce, thanks so much, man. I tell you, Lillard and McCollum, they really are. If the Warriors are the best backcourt in the NBA, I don't know how far away they are from being the next best. They really were phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's interesting, earlier in the season, Damon, when the Blazers were struggling a bit, people were wondering, you know, do you need to break up one of these guys and maybe trade him to get some help elsewhere? And I remember what Jerry West said when he initially took the job kind of advising the Warriors, and they had that opportunity maybe to trade Klay Thompson to Minnesota and get Kevin Love. And he said, I'll tell you what, he said, I wouldn't do that. I mean, if you got some holes on your team, I mean, don't take away one of your strengths to fill one of those holes. And so I think the Blazers are kind of in the same mindset, in that they feel
before
starting Beckler is a strength.
Before we get to game two and what we expect to see without Kevin Durant, it changes things if he does not play tomorrow night. And I know that Nurkic is out for game two as well. Going back to game one, though, I was really surprised, like I said, how good the Trailblazers backcourt was while they were asking to be double teamed all night, because there's nobody helping out. The third person never really emerged. El-Farouq Aminu, 0 points in 23 minutes. Didn't get anything really out of Myers Leonard or Evan Turner. Those two guys carried it. And after that game, are they sitting around thinking, hey, we might have a shot at this? Or are they thinking, we just took our best shot and we still lost here?
I think it was Mark Spears who asked Terry Stotts in the postgame press conference, you know, are you discouraged by, you know, what happened, that these guys had the great games and you still lost by double figures? Or, you know, or should I be looking at it differently? And he said, I think you should be looking at it differently. I mean, I think he felt that, you know, his team played well with the Warriors for three quarters, had one bad stretch to start the fourth quarter. And unfortunately with the Warriors, that's about all it takes. I mean, you know, you can play well for a majority of the game, and if you have one bad stretch, they may make you pay for it. And I think that's what happened at the start of the fourth quarter the other night. So, you know, the one thing that I've noticed, actually, I mean, you try to find chinks in the armor for the Warriors. It's not an easy thing to do. But one thing I have noticed is that if you get them in a close game, their record for the season is pretty pedestrian in effect. Games decided by six or less, Warriors are 8-7 this season. So, you know, you got to try to get them into a game that maybe is decided, you know, by a basket or two. And for some reason, they don't seem to fare as well in those situations. Normally, they're winning games, you know, quite handily. That's why they led the league in point differential in terms of, you know, wins versus losses. So, but if you can get them into a tight game, you know, maybe you got a shot. And I think the Blazers, three quarters, felt they were doing that. Unfortunately, it took the one, you know, 3-4 minute stretch to start the fourth quarter that turned the game into that double-figure advantage for the Warriors that they never gave up. So they're an awfully tough team to beat. There's no question about that. And I think the Blazers feel, though, they got some good things that they can build on, hopefully, from game one.
Brian Wheeler, play-by-play radio, voice of the Trailblazers here on 95.7 The Game. And look, it was a great backcourt performance. Without Nurkic, they were obviously missing a little something up front. You want to talk about numbers and what teams are supposed to be? I mean, since the All-Star break, the Trailblazers have been playing like a 52-win basketball team. You know, they've really been on a great pace. They did an incredible job making sure that they got that 8 seed. As I look at them, though, I wonder if in a way that might not, I don't want to say bite them in the future, but this team needs like one or two more pieces, and all of a sudden they're the Golden State Warriors from 3 years ago. I mean, they really are. I feel that way anyways. Do you think I'm way off or wrong? I think you got a lot to build on here.
Yeah, I think, you know, and if you were to ask them honestly, what did you expect when you made the trade for Nurkic? I think initially people were talking about the great thing about that deal is that the Blazers got a first-round pick from Denver. I don't think anybody knew what to expect. Nurkic was a guy that had fallen out of the playing rotation in Denver. If you talk to some of the Denver people, they felt that he was a bit of a malcontent. There was a story of him leaving a game at halftime when he wasn't going to be playing. And so, you know, he clearly was in a very bad spot in Denver and looking for a new lease on life. And I'm not sure that even in their wildest hopes and expectations that the Blazers thought they were going to get the player that they did end up receiving. And so it's obviously been a great symbiotic relationship. I mean, he's been great for the team. They've been great for him. And considering he's only 22 years of age, I can understand why they're being so cautious with his injury during this playoff series. They don't want to risk him for one series when they consider that this could be a guy that could be their center for a long, long time. So if you figure that maybe he brings them a big three by being you know, part of the triumvirate with Lillard and McCollum, then yeah, I think they're probably looking at a couple of spots to fill to you know, maybe be in a position where, you know, they're competing for a top four spot in the West as opposed to trying to sneak into the playoffs as the 8 seed. And I think had Nurkic been with them all season long, that's probably where they would have been.
Do you think that Nurkic appears in this series at all with all the delay in between games? Does he feel like he's a few days away, or does it still feel like he's more like a few weeks away?
It was funny. Today, I thought for the first time in some of the audio that I heard, I thought for the first time I heard a guy that wasn't as confident about playing. And maybe he's just kind of gotten a little discouraged by being hopeful of playing, and unfortunately the team keeps shooting it down. But I think maybe they're trying to explain to him probably also about taking a long-term approach to this. But it's frustrating for him. I mean, when he came to the Blazers, that was the one thing he talked about, that in his young career he had not experienced the postseason yet, and was hoping that he could do whatever was needed to help the team get to the playoffs. And now they finally, you know, get a chance to get there. And so far he hasn't been able to be an active participant, and clearly he would make the Blazers a better team and give them a better chance of winning the series. So I think all along, you know, they had talked about at least a 2-week time frame. And, you know, now we're at 2.5. So maybe there's a better chance he plays in game 3 and possibly makes a little Willis Reed appearance and comes out with a already raucous Moda Center crowd and kind of lifts everybody's spirits even more by being able to play in a game 3. But I think all along the hope had been that he could appear at some point in the series. But clearly they're not going to take any chances with him if things aren't perfect. And so he still says he has a little pain. And I mean, that's probably all they needed to hear to say that, all right, that's enough to us for us to keep shutting you down until you tell us that you don't have any pain.
You know, I know as the official radio voice of the Trailblazers, you obviously got to call the building what they're paying it to be called, Moda Center. But how often do you slip back into Rose Garden mode?
I've gotten pretty good about it. I think that's a pretty good training. So I've trained myself not to say it. In fact, I also had to get trained. They told me that they prefer, you know, you hear some arenas they don't want to be called Staples Center as opposed to the Staples Center. So initially it was the Moda Center. Now they tell me that they prefer for it to be called just Moda Center. So I had to get used to saying that as well. So I think I've said it enough times now and done enough interviews that I think I say it to help myself to make sure that when it comes down to a key moment that I don't slip and fall back into previous ways of describing the building that was the only way it was described for so many years.
It's like in that movie about Facebook. You got to drop the. It's cleaner if you do it that way. Brian, really appreciate it. You are one of the great voices in the NBA. I'll tell you, I don't know if we got a better play-by-play matchup in any round in the NBA right now. Brian Wheeler versus Tim Roy. That's legendary.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tim is one of my great friends in the league, and I'm really, considering all the years, and I tell him this all the time, all the years that he had to go through not getting to the playoffs when he was in Sacramento and even his early time with the Warriors, he certainly is getting a taste of what great runs and long runs and in seasons toward championships are all about. So I told him, now he's getting to be a little greedy. I said, you got a championship, you almost won another one, you're probably going to win another one this year. I said, let the rest of us maybe have a little taste of this in the future. And but I think he's enjoying it so much, he understandably doesn't want it to end anytime soon. But he's a good guy, and I'm happy that he's getting to call all these great games and all these exciting players that the Warriors have.
Brian, thank you very much. It was great talking with you. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Very good, Damon. Anytime.
Thank you. Brian Wheeler, play-by-play radio voice of the Portland Trail Blazers, one of the best in the biz, as is John Morosi when it comes to talking a little Major League Baseball. That's next on the Damon Bruce Show.
Baumgartner likes the first one he sees. Again, the 1-2, and a fastball swung on and missed.
Oh, man, as soon as he took the hill, you know, I had all the confidence in the world once we had that lead and he was out there. I knew he was going to go all the way. That's just what his makeup's all about.
These kinds of performances are few and far between. What the Schillings do, what the Hershisers do. You don't see many of them, but Baumgartner is right in that category with what he's done here this year. 0-2, and a swing and a fly ball to left center field. Blanco shading over makes the catch. And Baumgartner retires the Royals in order.
Historic, legendary. I mean, we're not standing here right now if it's not for him. Unbelievable. Like you said, we've used that word special, spectacular, tremendous, and all those things.
3-2, Giants lead the Royals. Two outs, nobody on, bottom seven, and the 0-2 curveball swung on and missed. He strikes him out and ends the inning.
He's a different human being. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, yesterday I told him, you know, if you're going to go out there tomorrow, you know, you better bring it. And he said, just watch me. So this guy, every start, he gets better and better. And what you see is what you get.
Again, the 2-2 pitch and a swing and a ball popped up. This is going to be in play and foul territory for Sandoval. And the Giants have won the World Series again. Madison Baumgartner with a phenomenal performance. 5 shutout innings in relief here tonight. And for the third time in 5 seasons, the San Francisco Giants are the champions of the baseball world.
And a horse was out there, and we rode him, and it's historic what this kid's done.
Dan Shulman had the call in 2014 for ESPN Radio, and tomorrow night, Madison Bumgarner returns to the scene of the crime where he stole a World Series from Kansas City with one of the most amazing pitching performances out of the bullpen we have ever seen. Tonight, it's Matt Cain getting the Giants off at Kauffman Stadium against the Royals, and to talk about that, to set up this week, our buddy John Morosi stops on by earlier than usual. He's got a travel day coming up on Friday, so we said, let's talk today from Fox Sports and MLB Network. John Morosi joining us. Man, us Madison Bumgarner memories, those take me back, man. I was covering the Giants. I'm not a Giant fan, but that night I was in, I was licking the window pane. I didn't want to leave that place. It was incredible.
It was, Damon. And I was there as well, and I remember just the disbelief that was rippling through the press box that night, as inning after inning went on, and it became apparent to all of us that he was going to finish the game. And you looked at the bullpen, there was no one down there. There was not even a thought. And I remember there was that brief moment, the first inning in which he came in, where it looked as though he was out of sync, and the Royals had a real good chance to seize control of the game before he settled in. And I remember just the stories that we heard later about Posey's conversation with him, and Madison just said, "Hey, get back behind the plate. I got this thing figured out." And he just basically just threw his way into a rhythm. And he entered not quite himself, but as soon as he got into a rhythm, there was no disrupting. And, of course, and then the bottom of the ninth comes, and the play in left field, and the ball gets by Perez, and all of a sudden there's the thought about, oh, my gosh, should Gordon try to score? Just those memories, as I was listening to the call there by Dan Shulman, it just brought back a lot of great memories. And I do think, Damon, I'll make this point. The fact that the Royals won it the next year, I think will help tomorrow night's game really, I think, take on a tone of a real remembrance, even on the part of the Royals fans. I mean, because they at least won it the next year.
Right.
And so there's not maybe this bitterness there, where I think they appreciate, they're great baseball fans of Kansas City. They appreciate the magnitude of what they saw that night, and I think it really will help there be a really neat reflection. Now, I don't know if they'll formally recognize it necessarily, but I think the fans there really know exactly how great it was what Bumgarner did back in 2014.
Yeah, they appreciate it. I think as a baseball fan, no matter what uniform greatness is wearing, you at least respect it. You really, really do. And Madison Bumgarner has earned respect to infinity in the city of Kansas City and basically any city that he's pitched in. Hey, Matt Cain was never maybe respected like that, but he certainly was more respected than he is now. He had a pretty darn good Matt Cain performance his last time out. And I don't know if I want to buy into hope, because the question is, well, can he do it again? Can he put two starts together instead of just one? He goes tonight. What do you think happens?
Well, I was encouraged by what he did last time out, Damon. And you look at the big picture here, and at the minor league level right now, Beattie hasn't gotten off to a great start, and Block is now in the bullpen at the major league level. So I think Cain has to be their guy for a while. I mean, if it really goes the wrong way for a period of time and the Giants just have to find someone else, then I think Bruce Bochy makes that decision eventually. But he said it. I know he's been on record as saying it, Bruce Bochy has, but listen, Matt Cain has earned this right to basically have this spot until he proves he can't do it anymore. And whether or not that's the most cutthroat, competitive way to look at it, I'm not sure, but the reality is this team has won three World Series in this decade, and when you do that, you build up some equity, and he's done that. So I think for Cain, is it the crisp stuff that we saw in the 2010 World Series against Texas? No, but he has, I think, enough left in the tank to get out to the major league level, certainly as the number five starter, and I think we've seen that at least often enough here in the first month of the season to believe that he's got a chance to keep this job for at least the foreseeable future.
By the way, I got someone here on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line saying, don't forget that night Madison pitched was also the night that technology and stuff was born.
When
the guy gave him the truck with technology and
That's
stuff.
Right. One of the great sayings, I wonder, Damon, if that has actually been trademarked. Because it was a moment that became certainly a meme. And I wonder if we will see that, see that again.
It appeared in a Super Bowl commercial. Chevy was like, we have technology and stuff. it was great. You know, the Oakland A's got off to a good start for the Oakland A's with promising pitching performances, making up for what you knew was lacking in other areas. Unfortunately, the injury bug bit them right at the same time a four-game losing streak began, and Kendall Graveman, who on Friday we were singing the praises of, is now on the DL, and Marcus Semien, who is a better hitter than he might even be shortstop defensively, has wrist surgery, and I can't think of anything that is harder for a hitter to overcome than I just had wrist surgery.
Yes. Two really tough pieces of news, Damon, right there for the A's. And I think certainly, first of all, it's your opening day starter in Graveman, on top of the fact that your original opening day starter, Gray, is still on the DL. So you're down your top two starters at a time when candidly, your pitching depth at AAA probably isn't ideal. They do have Ross Detweiler down there, who, of course, has some major league experience, so maybe it's him that we'll see in the big leagues here pretty soon. But to me, those are two issues that I think the A's, it's going to be really hard to overcome, Gray and now Graveman as well. And then again, your shortstop. I think at a time when, Semien, you saw the numbers he put up last year. This guy's a really good offensive shortstop who I think has improved a lot defensively as well. And as you point out, I think very astutely, Damon, is the fact that you have a wrist injury, a wrist surgery for a hitter is very problematic indeed. So it looks like in the near term, you got Adam Rosales. Maybe he's going to play some games over there, but it's certainly not ideal. And it's two spots there for the A's, starting pitching and shortstop, where they did not really enter spring training with an abundance of depth, which I think really puts them behind the eight ball in a division that I think is now getting more competitive as we're seeing Houston start to reestablish itself as probably the best team in that division.
Even teams going through a rebuild who have just taken the tarps off the upper deck do need to still sell tickets. And I think Chris Davis is going to sell some tickets for the Oakland A's this summer. Right now he's leading the AL with 6 home runs. But we all know anyone, when a team falls out of contention, might be a trade piece when you're an Oakland A. Do you think they look at Chris Davis as the power they need now or the piece that they'll trade for what they need later?
Great question, Damon. And I really think you look at what he has done, and I agree with you. He is one of the elite power hitters in the game right now. We can say that's pretty lofty praise, but that's a fact. Look at what he has done. Look at his plate appearances per home run. He is an elite power hitter. And now I think we look around the game, and there are some teams that really do need elite right-handed, especially power. I think you look at the Dodgers. What a great fit he would be for the Dodgers from a standpoint of a trade. And the Dodgers, as we know, they've done business with the A's in the very recent past, as recently as last summer. So there's a good conversation there. Of course, Farhan Zaidi knows both organizations very well. You could see the makings of a possible deal there. So I think we have to certainly be mindful of that and assume, based on history, that the status quo will continue to be there, which is basically that the A's have to be willing to engage on their key players as they enter their middle arbitration years and get towards free agency. That being said, I think that part of the conversation, too, is that let's see where the A's are regarding their stadium situation by the later part of July. And I realize it's kind of asking a lot for there to be a real-time decision about, okay, where are we at right now from a standpoint of the politics and the financing in terms of our projection on a stadium. But to me, Damon, Chris Davis, you hope, if you're an A's fan, you hope that he is maybe the first player that they're able to lock up long-term because there's some degree of confidence about a new ballpark. And I think that's really a real-time storyline where if they're confident now, or if at least there's enough positivity in a month or two, they say, listen, we think that we've got an idea of where this story is going. You know what? We have the financial wherewithal to sign you because we think things are going to progress in a good way. And then maybe he becomes the first player of this new chapter for the A's. I think that's what A's fans right now have to be hoping for because, as I pointed out, this guy is one of the absolute best power-hitting outfielders in Major League Baseball.
And we're going to call that next chapter, congratulations, you're all grown up now. And we look forward to it. We really look forward to it when it happens. John, thanks as always, man. Great catching up with you. Let's do it again next week.
My pleasure, Damon. A great time of year, and certainly a big one here for the Sharks coming up, Game 4 against the Oilers as well.
look at him setting up my next segment as well. John Morosi, you are the man. Thank you, brother.
My pleasure. Thanks, David. Thank you.
Yeah, we do have Oilers and Sharks. Edmonton leading 2-1. Game four is tonight. Look, the Sharks haven't scored in 120 minutes of ice time. I am not Canadian, nor am I a part of Hockey Night in Canada. But it was with 100% confidence, I will tell you, that that is a very odd way to go about winning a Stanley Cup playoff series. It's going to take at least one goal. It might not take two, but it takes at least one goal to win a playoff hockey game. I am sure of it. So we'll see if the Sharks can find one tonight.
Donskoy? Yeah, we're waiting.
Seriously, can we get a little something? Hopefully Jumbo Joe looks a little bit better on the ice. He made his I'm back debut in game three. Hopefully he looks a little bit better in game four. Meanwhile, when it comes to the playoffs, we'll remind you that 95.7 The Game is your home for every Warrior playoff game, radio, mobile, app, web streaming. We got you covered. Game two tomorrow. Warriors warm up starting at 6 o'clock at Oracle Arena. I hope you choose to be there. We choose Tony Bruno with the number one pick of the next segment.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.